Four Corners broadcast the Canberra Bobble. It shone a light on alleged inappropriate behaviour between some male and female workers in Parliament House, including prominent politicians and staffers. And today, the day after that report aired, the spotlight is burning even more brightly on relationships in the workplace, what's appropriate and what's not. In a moment, I'm going to introduce you to Dr. Mariah Foley, who is behind an extensive study that's looked into the lived experiences of women working in male-dominated industries in Australia. But first, Lisa Heap is a researcher who's currently investigating why regulations have failed to prevent gender-based violence in Australian workplaces, as well as new regulatory approaches that may prevent gender-based violence. Previously, she's worked with the Australian Catholic University. Good afternoon, Lisa.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the invitation.
I'm quite stunned that there is a significant amount of gender-based violence in the workplace. That's your area of interest. Before we get into the topic of the day, just tell us a little bit about that.
So what we're looking at is sexual harassment and other forms of gender-based violence. So in our approach, in my work, we look at it as a continuum of behaviours and practices, anywhere from those sort of belittling comments and commentaries, jokes, things that are designed to undermine based on the gender of the person, all the way through to sexual harassment, sexual assault and rape. So we're really looking at that whole continuum, and we're saying it's everywhere in Australian workplaces, like it's everywhere in Australian society. And so it's a major issue that we need to address.
And that is the point of talking about it, because this is not just happening in the Canberra bubble, as we saw on Four Corners last night, is it?
No, it's unfortunate. It's bad that it's there, but it's also bad that it's everywhere else as well. There's absolute evidence from major national inquiries performed by the Human Rights Commission through to all sorts of work that researchers like Maria and her colleagues do as well, that it's in every industry, in every occupation, sometimes to differing degrees, but it's across the board.
You had an article actually published in The Conversation earlier in the year, and in that you said that current approaches to harassment in our offices and workplaces are largely reactive. What do you mean by that, and how could they be more proactive?
Yeah, so when you think about it, we get taught about sexual harassment, particularly in workplaces, from the point of view of you shouldn't do it. But we largely get taught about the complaints-making process that you can enact if you have experienced it. So our whole focus in workplaces is largely generated by organisations' desire to protect themselves from complaints about sexual harassment. So at the moment, our system is about someone complaining that they've experienced it and then seeking redress for that, that they've experienced it. So that's a reactive response. It requires the event to happen. It requires the sexual harassment or other forms of gender-based violence that have happened, and then someone can make a complaint about it. So what we really want to move towards more is a prevention focus, which is one which would say, let's not have it at all, let's stop it before it starts. The difficulty with a prevention focus is, of course, it requires us to all think about everything that we're doing, and it requires organisations to take global responsibility for the fact that it's likely to exist in their workplaces. And so rather than sort of just having mechanisms for people to make complaints and a series of policies that say it shouldn't happen, they would have to be proactive and say, well, we're going to plan to ensure that we make sure it doesn't enter into our workplace.
And I guess it needs to be a regular thing. There needs to be some sort of maintenance of that culture if you're going to make sure it doesn't happen. That might be regular training or something on an ongoing basis, which I guess some businesses might see as an impost.
Yeah, I think from my research, most employers are still seeing this as an issue of a few aberrant individuals doing the wrong thing in the workplace. And what we know is it's much bigger than that. So we need employers to understand that the risks context of gender-based violence and particular sexual harassment in the workplace is not just about a few individuals who are doing the wrong thing. It's about the way they structure the work. It's the culture that they create in the workplace. It's about the cues and symbols that they have in the workplace. It's about what you define as leadership in your workplace, who you have as your workplace leaders, if it's one gender versus another, all those symbols and signals that say that some people are more important than others, or some people should be rewarded more than others, or some people are safer than others because they are in a power position within the workplace.
Lisa Heap is with me. She's a gender workplace researcher, and I'd like to bring in another researcher in this field, Dr. Mariah Foley, who's worked at the University of Sydney and is looking into the relationship between men and women through the lens of male-dominated industries. Dr. Foley, good afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Just give us an idea of what type of male-dominated industries you've been looking at. What are the workplaces we're talking about, and what is the broad brush culture in some of those places?
So male-dominated occupations and industries are those where women represent 25% or less of workers. So our research most recently at the University of Sydney Business School looked at very male-dominated or hyper-masculine occupations and industries in which women comprise 15% or less of workers. And we recently published a paper looking at the experiences of women working in commercial aviation, so as pilots, and as automotive trades people. And what we found in this research is that women, although they love the work that they're doing, their day-to-day experiences in these occupations and industries can leave much to be desired. So the experience of sort of gender-based harassment, so belittling jokes, demeaning comments, which can come from colleagues, managers, or customers, is kind of a daily feature of these women's experiences. And because they're not overtly sexual in nature, many of the women had difficulty sort of even articulating a language about what they were experiencing, which was very unpleasant and made them feel both unwelcome and unsafe in those environments.
And do you think that those kinds of environments have other negative ramifications, perhaps even for men who don't fit the within that culture?
Well, certainly, some of our participants described to us what we would describe as a bystander culture, where these types of kind of belittling barbs and jokes, you know, little comments like, "Ha, do you know what's funny? Women's rights, or little, you belong in the kitchen. No wonder we had a bumpy landing," you know, when they discovered that the pilot was a woman, which were directed at the women because of their gender. A lot of the women reported that their male colleagues didn't often step in and intervene, perhaps because of the interpersonal dynamics of stepping in to say, "Hey, that's not okay either." But it would certainly have an impact on men's experiences in those workplaces as well.
Yeah, well, I'm just wondering if there's ever been any research that shows that those workplaces that are leaning towards being sexist or misogynist or tolerating those kind of comments are also workplaces where you find greater instances of bullying of both genders.
But that certainly would be interesting, and I'm not specifically aware of studies that show links between sexual harassment and bullying. Perhaps my colleague Lisa is aware of those. What I do know is that international and Australian research has shown very strongly that there's a causal link between gender diversity, having a more equal representation of both men and women and people of color, has positive impacts on organizational profitability and productivity. But it doesn't stop there. Large-scale international research has shown that increasing gender equality at work improves life satisfaction and happiness for both men and women. So there are benefits to both genders to tackling some of these problems, and recognizing that equality is not a zero-sum gain, that benefits to one gender group don't come at the expense of the other. Both parties benefit, and organizations benefit as well.
One of our listeners, Kate, has texted in on the subject. Kate says, I worked at a Sydney club in the late 80s. The culture was appallingly sexist and the power dynamic was very unbalanced. We knew no different at the time. However, it was uncomfortable and in hindsight, gosh, if we'd complained, we lost shifts. Ogled at and very inappropriate comments. I don't agree with not dating workmates. That's where we spend most of our time and meet people, just not the men from the club in the 80s. Thanks very much, Kate. How much have workplaces changed and what needs to happen, I guess, for workplaces to realise that this is not just an issue of women, it's an issue of men and women, and that everybody benefits?
It's about creating safe environments for both men and women to thrive. So I've already spoken about the sort of profitability motive that organizations have in making their workplaces more gender balanced and more gender equal. And there is a real benefit there in this to tackling this issue.
Mm. And Lisa Heap, do you see the similar sort of thing?
Yes, I mean, I think I've got examples of working, just to answer your previous question, examples of working with young men in the building construction industry, which is about a very male-dominated industry, as you know. And the work that I did with them, they expressed real concern about the hyper-masculinity within that industry and what that might mean for them. So they were expressing desires that they wanted to be more involved in their children's lives, have more active, they felt they had respectful relationships with their female partners. Some of them were gay and they didn't want to express that in the workplace because of the hyper-masculinity in those workplaces. And so they were actually expressing serious concerns about, you know, the restrictions that that kind of form of masculinity and definition of what it is to be a worker in that area had for them, and a desire for their own industry, which again, they loved the work, to take on board ideas like more flexible work arrangements, more time, more respectful relationships, somebody else helping them call it out, because of course to be an individual on a building site, for example, and to call out sexist behaviour is very difficult to do. And I know a number of the unions in that area are trying to do some work in that space to try and to break down some of those sort of traditional ideas. So it does have an impact on both men and women, and it does sort of like impact, again, if you happen to be also of a different ethnicity, if you happen to be gay or, you know, anything like that, those sorts of things all accumulate with a negative impact on workers. What I'm really concerned about is that aspect of the fact that we know that gender-based violence injures workers. And so in the past, things like sexual harassment and other forms of gender-based violence have been treated as kind of, it's an equal opportunity matter, it's a gender equality matter, it goes over to a space which is a marginal issue in workplaces, and the individual has to fight that concern by themselves. Whereas if we actually understand that it injures workers, both psychologically and sometimes physically, then we can say, well, when we know something injures workers in the workplace, we deal with it, we prevent it, because we have health and safety regulation around those sorts of things. So I'm really interested in working on whether or not a health and safety approach, which actually understands the injury that's caused to people, will help us to build a collective idea that we can collectively address these issues, and employers have a responsibility and a duty under health and safety legislation to make the workplace safe.
And are you seeing any workplaces that are treating this as a workplace health and safety issue?
Well, I think we're seeing some starting to do it, and this is a kind of new, you know, relatively new framing of the issue in this way. But first of all, for example, it's only very recently that any of our workplace health and safety regulators have said openly that they address it, that they believe it is a workplace health and safety issue. And that, of course, is not even uniform across the country. So we've got, you know, if the regulators themselves aren't prioritising it, if the work health and safety regulators aren't prioritising it, then, you know, that's going to be more difficult to get organisations to place an emphasis on it.
It has been a fascinating conversation that we could have for a lot longer, but I do appreciate your time, both of you, this afternoon. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Mariah Foley from the University of Sydney and Lisa Heap, who's a gender workplace researcher. In fact, they both are gender workplace researchers. Really interesting perspectives on that topic.